This is HPR episode 2808 entitled, Haskell Function Types. It is hosted by Tuku Toroto, and is about 24 minutes long, and carries a clean flag. The summary is, Tutorto gives overview of function types in Haskell.
This episode of HPR is brought to you by archive.org. Support universal access to all knowledge by heading over to archive.org/donate.
Hello, this is Tuukka Turto, and you are listening to the HackerBug Radio. Today's episode will be about function signatures in Haskell. Again, this is something that I should have done ages ago, but once again, better late than never. So Haskell is a statically typed language, which means that when it's compiled, the compiler checks the program for type errors. So it makes sure that you're not mixing, for example, strings and numbers. And for that, it needs types. And type is just a definition of what kind of values can be used. So typical ones are int, integer, string, text, boolean, and so on. There's quite a lot of them in the Haskell. And of course, new ones can be defined by the programmer. And type names always start with the uppercase letter. So, then Haskell does type inference, meaning that if you choose so, you can omit type declarations completely. You don't have to tell Haskell that type of this function is something. You just can omit those completely, and Haskell will try and figure out what kind of types would work for that. But it's helpful for the programmers if you are writing type declarations out, because then they can more easily check from the source code what kind of types some function takes. And also, it instructs Haskell compiler that this function should have this kind of type signature. Otherwise, if you don't specify that, Haskell will try to figure out what's the type signature. Sometimes it works, usually it works, but at the point where you make a mistake, then the Haskell compiler will try to figure out the type, and it might give you a compiler error somewhere completely different place. So you should write type declarations at the top level of your program, meaning that all your functions should have types in them. And the type declaration is written as a name of the function, colon, and then types that it takes. So for example, the simple. I won't be talking that much about the code in this episode. I will be talking more about the signatures and what kind of things you can do with those and what they tell you about the functions. So the simple case is that you could have a function called add that takes two integers and produces an integer. And this is as a type declaration is written on top of the function definition. I mean, so type declaration for this type of function would be add :: integer arrow integer arrow integer. So it takes two integers and it produces value of integer. And you don't have to have a specific types sometimes you can have, you can mark that anything goes here. For example, if you had a another made up example, you could have a function that has signature of choose colon colon a arrow boolean arrow a, and a's are lowercase here. So it that means that this function choose takes two values of type a, which can be anything, a boolean, and it will produce a value of a. And a is always the same type in this function. It can be anything, but it's always the same in like you cannot mix, you cannot put different types in the a. And we don't know anything about the a. It can be absolutely anything, which means that we also cannot do much inside in the choose function with the a. Basically, we are given two a's and boolean, and based on that boolean, we are returning either one of those a's. So, if you want to add a bit more functionality in that case, in a case where we don't have a specific type, we can use something called ad hoc polymorphism. So if you remember the add function that I mentioned a couple of minutes ago, it only works with integers. You cannot use it with floats. You could of course define add f that works with the floats, and then some add I that works with the imaginary numbers and so on. But it would be kind of silly, because then the programmer would have to remember that here I'm adding integers, so I have to use add, and here I'm using float, so I have to use addf. So we can define that by using a type constraint. That means that we are writing it, the signatures would be add colon colon open parent uppercase num lowercase a, close parent, fat arrow, a, arrow, a, arrow, a. So this means that a is constrained to be an instance of num, and add function takes two a's and produces a. And num in this case is a type class that defines some functions that every instance of num implements. So you know that if you are given, if your function takes an a, you don't know exactly what it is, but you know that because it's a num, it has some functions that you can use on it. And num defines plus, minus, multiplication, negate, ups, signum, and from integer. So it's some very, very basic number type arithmetics. And I'm going to talk about type classes another time. They are really, really neat concept, but cramming them into this episode will make this a bit too long, I think. So if you have a type constraint, that is a uppercase num a fat arrow, means that everything in the type the type signature a is always a num. And you can have of course multiple type constraints. You can say that you could say that a has multiple constraints, or you could have that something that a is constrained to something and b is constrained to something. And then we are not using b in this case, but you can have multiple type parameters there. So that is how you can use pretty generalized functions. And the cool thing is that our add function will work for every num instance. So if somebody comes with some new data type that implements, that has an instance of none, our function will work with that, no problem. If that num instance is written properly. Then you can have parameterized functions, like for example you could have a function called first that has a signature of first colon colon open bracket A, close bracket, arrow, maybe A. And this is a function then that takes a list of A, that's the A inside of brackets, and A again can be anything, and it returns maybe A. I talk about the maybe in an early episode. It is a type that is used to signify value that might not be present. So A can be anything again. So you are given a list of A's and it returns maybe an A. And maybe an A can be nothing or just A. So in case you are given a list of that it has at least one element, this would presumably return the first element of that list as a just A. But if you are given an empty list, this would crash, it would just return nothing. And if we want to use functions, again, this is something really basic that I should have probably should have taught ages ago. But when you are calling or applying a function, you don't need parentheses. So our add function can be called just writing simple add 1, 2. So you don't need parentheses. And this means, of course, that if you are chaining functions, like you are, for example, you are calling, you want to add more things, you can write it as a add $1, add 2, 3. And the $ is therefore the application order. It instructs that for the Haskell compiler, it instructs that first you evaluate the right side, add 2 and 3, and then you use that value in the evaluation of the left side, add 1. So you're basically, you could use parentheses, you could write that in a add 1 open parent, add 2, 3 close parent, and the result would be identical, 6 in both cases. And it's a bit of a personal preference which one you do use. I usually opt for using $. Sometimes it is easier to parentheses. But it's good to know that there's an options. And that's one thing that really took some time to get used for me, is that you don't use parentheses at all in a function call. You just write the function name and then you write the parameters. There's another neat concept in Haskell is the partial application. So you can call function with less parameters than it expects, and it won't cause a runtime error. For example, you could define, if we have defined that add function, we could define another function, say add lots equal add 1000. So we are calling our add function that expects two parameters with a single parameter. What happens here is that it will automatically generate us a new, when you're calling an add with just a single parameter, instead of runtime error, we are going to get a new function back. And this function works exactly like add function that has the first parameter 1000. So now that we have our add lots that equals to add 1000, we can use our add lots to just call add lots 5. And this is equal to calling add 1005. So you can easily create new functions. And for example, sometimes I like to use this in a way that I have some general function that takes some sort of configuration and then some sort of parameter that instructs that uses, and then that parameter and configuration results to some value. For example, if I had a game where you have a buildings and I wanted to know a cost of a building, I would have a general function that would have a list of those building costs, and then it will take a name of the building and result would be the cost of the building. It will go through that list, find the building, return the cost of that building. I can use this partial application to create a function that takes the general configuration that is used in everywhere in the program, and afterwards I don't have to pass that configuration into that function anymore, because I have that new function that has been sort of configured to use that list of buildings. So I can just call that new function with name of the building and it will give me the cost of the building. Completely made up explanation, but that's a one way I could use this. And this is called currying. So Wikipedia says that in mathematics and computer science, currying is the technique of translating the evaluation of a function that takes multiple arguments into evaluating a sequence of functions, each with a single argument. There was some mathematician called, I think he was called Howard Curry, who came up with this, and a bit earlier, another mathematician called Scherfinkel came up with the same idea. So if the curry wouldn't have, I don't know why this is named after Curry, Howard Curry, because if it weren't named after him, we wouldn't be talking about currying, but the Scherfinkeling, which I think it would be a funnier name. But in any case, you can do partial application, and the order of the parameters matter, as they are evaluated from left to right. So sometimes it makes sense to think the parameter order a bit more than what I was used to when I was coding with another languages, because if you have to always supply all the parameters, the order of the parameters doesn't really matter, but here, because you don't have to supply all the parameters, then the order starts mattering a bit more. For example, if I had a function find podcasts that take a list of podcasts and a name of a author and produces a list of podcasts, I could, if that function is called find podcasts. So find podcast has a signature of list of podcasts, text, list of podcasts. So I could define a new function called search that equals to find podcast, loaded podcast. Loaded podcast is a list of podcasts that came from somewhere, not important from where. And then I could use that function as a my podcast equals search Tuturpa. And that would search from that original list of podcasts, all the podcasts are made by me. But if the parameter order would be other way around in the find podcast function, it would first take the name and then the list of the podcast. This method wouldn't work. Okay, then functions as types. Functions themselves are also types. So, and they can be used as a values. So you can, if you have a function, it can return a function. And if you, and also a function can take a, another function as a parameter. One very common function that does this is a filter. And it has a signature of filter, colon, colon, open parents, a, arrow bool, close parents, arrow, open bracket, a, close bracket, arrow, open bracket, let me do that again. So filter has a signatures of filter, colon, colon, open parent, a, arrow, bool, close parent, arrow, open bracket, a, close bracket, arrow, open bracket, a, close bracket. So filter is a function that takes a two parameters. First parameter is a function that has type of a arrow bool. And the second parameter is a list of a. And it will return a list of a. So you need to have a two functions that have a matching a. A can be anything, but it has to be same on both of those functions in the filter and in that parameter that the filter takes. And what the filter does is that it will apply that function that was given to every element in the list, and for every element that evaluates to, for every element that the function evaluates to true, it will return as a new list. So it, it as the name implies, it is used to filter a list with a given function. It will find all the function, all the elements in the in that list that will return true when given to that parameter function. You can use that, for example, writing a filter or open bracket 1 dot dot then close bracket. This will produce a list of odd numbers in a range of 1 to 10. And the last thing I'm going to cover today is the anonymous functions. Sometimes you need function to pass in as a parameter, like in the previous case, but you don't want to define and give it a name. It might be that you are going to use it only once, or it is so short that it does not really need a name, it doesn't warrant having a name. So for those cases we have a long path, or anonymous functions. And the syntax is a, for a lambda function, is a, for example, if we were going to use in the filtering example previously, we would want to filter all the odd numbers that are bigger than 5. We could write it in a following way. Filter, open paren, slash x, arrow, odd x, ampersand, ampersand, x greater than 5, close paren, open bracket, 1, dot, dot, then close bracket. So here we are, here we would be defining an anonymous function that takes a single parameter, x, and checks that the x is odd and that x is greater than 5. If those both are true, then the value of the function is true, and this we use to filter all the odd numbers greater than 5 in a range of, from 1 to 10. And you don't have to specify types here. Haskell will figure them out for you. So the syntax is a slash, parameters, arrow, and body. And you can have multiple parameters in the function. They are just separated by the spaces. And often you have to wrap this thing in a parenthesis when you're passing it in so that the Haskell compiler knows where the where the anonymous function starts and where it ends. Okay, that's it for today. If you have any questions or comments or corrections, easy way of catching me is either email or at the Fediverse, where I'm tuturto@mastodon.social, or you can even better, you can make your own Hacker Public Radio episode. Okay, thank you for listening. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to Hacker Public Radio at hackerpublicradio.org. We are a community podcast network that releases shows every weekday, Monday through Friday. Today's show, like all our shows, was contributed by an HPR listener like yourself. If you ever thought of recording a podcast, then click on our contribute link to find out how easy it really is. Hacker Public Radio was founded by the Digital Dog Pound and the Infonomicon Computer Club and is part of the Binary Revolution at binrev.com. If you have comments on today's show, please email the host directly, leave a comment on the website, or record a follow-up episode yourself. Unless otherwise stated, today's show is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Share Alike 3.0 license.